Chapter 3, Failure is a Necessity of Success. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed. Michael Jordan. In 1900, Albert Einstein graduated with a degree in physics. In 1905, as a young physicist, he published 4 papers, including the first exploration of the theory of special relativity. These papers detailed theories that had yet to be proven. A solar eclipse was needed to illustrate the light of outlying stars bending around the sun. The chance to photograph just such an event took place in 1914. Erwin Finlay Freundlich, William Wallace Campbell, and their respective teams took on the challenge of proving or disproving Einstein. Unfortunately, the location from which to view the solar eclipse was in Russia, which was a challenge because of Germany's declaration of war on Russia. Finlay Freundlich and his assistants, who were German nationals, were captured as POWs in Russia, and their equipment was seized. Although Campbell, an American, was able to keep the process moving, cloud cover obscured the eclipse, making the entire trip fruitless. However, failure commonly leads to future success. Einstein was devastated by the failure. Knowing that solar eclipses are rare and that the locations to view them are often not ideal, this was truly viewed as a setback. After getting himself back in order, Einstein went over his theory and realized that, had the expedition to photograph the solar eclipse been successful, his theory would have been proven wrong. Einstein revisited and adjusted his calculations. It was not until 1915, a decade after initially publishing his work, that he updated the theory of special relativity with his general theory of relativity. Furthermore, he needed to wait an additional 3 years for another observable solar eclipse to provide supporting evidence. 2 teams went out, including Campbell and Heber Curtis, to prove or disprove his new theory. This time, the eclipse viewing was unhindered by Russian soldiers or clouds. While Curtis claimed that his photos supported Einstein's theory, Campbell seemed to offer evidence to the contrary. However, Campbell's equipment was thought to have possibly been compromised, so he and his team held back on publishing their findings for fear that their reputation would be tarnished if they were later found to be wrong. The scientific community had to wait for yet another solar eclipse. On May 29th of 1919, an eclipse provided the evidence that would rocket Einstein to worldwide celebrity status. However, the cloud cover around that solar eclipse still left many in the scientific community unconvinced. It fell back to Campbell and his crew to either squash or justify the skepticism. On September 21st of 1922, a solar eclipse was expected to be visible over Australia. With better equipment, they went out amid much fanfare. 7 additional expeditions scattered around Australia set themselves up to observe and photograph the same solar eclipse. The resulting images proved Einstein's theory of general relativity, and the scientific community's understanding of light, matter, and energy has grown ever since. All of this happened through a world war, a failed marriage for Einstein, several failed expeditions, as well as a lot of skepticism from the scientific community and beyond. Where would we be with our technology and understanding of the universe had clouds not blocked that first solar eclipse in 1914? After learning all of this and how Campbell and his team continued to persist in their efforts to prove or disprove the theory, you may ask yourself, where are your own clouds? Can you imagine how pissed off you would be if you had taken tons of equipment on boats and donkeys, set up weeks ahead of time for this one moment, only to have a cloudy day ruin your trip? When I compare this to the internet going down for a few minutes or traffic getting a little tight, I understand that I really don't have any problems. Lessons learned. Failure is an option. Failure is inevitable. Anticipate failure in all sizes and at all times, most of it unexpected and probably more than a little daunting. You cannot succeed without failure. So the more you fail, the more successful you will be. True failure comes from not getting started and not persisting. The point in telling you this story is to illustrate just how important failure can be. Consider how many turning points worked in Einstein's favor. Consider also that if Campbell had been successful in Russia, it may have squelched inquiry into general relativity. Another point is the sheer strength of persistence. Campbell could have left after his first try, chalked it up to experience, and moved on doing his own thing. But he didn't. He kept pursuing his goal of proving or disproving Einstein's theories. Regardless of the outcomes of each expedition, he persisted. There are two mistakes one can make along the road to truth: not going all the way and not starting. Buddha. Of course, failure can be a real pain in the ass. No one gets excited because they failed. Have you ever lost $50,000 in your business due to an overlooked opportunity and were super happy about it? Probably not. But if, because of that loss, you put systems in place to make sure it didn't happen again, and you landed over $200,000 in the next deal as a direct result, are you a happy camper? You bet you are. You're probably jumping up and down with the sticky s'mores fingers happy. Learn from mistakes. Keep in mind that the value of failure lies in learning from our mistakes. My kid and I were at a park one day when he was 2 years old. He was lifting himself between the seats of two picnic tables. He was doing these kiddie dips and having fun until he slipped and fell. He smacked his head on the concrete pad of the park shelter. He cried one of those super loud kid screams that make the world seem like it's crumbling in your very hands. After a minute of consoling him, I asked him if he wanted to try again. He jumped out of my arms and raced back over to those picnic tables. He hoisted himself up and started lifting himself up again. It was going to take more than a bit of concrete to stop him from getting better and learning from his failure. And you can bet he had a much better hold on those picnic table seats. Every once in a while, you or your business are going to hit a bit of concrete as you try to lift yourself up. When you fall, you accept the failure for what it is, a learning experience and nothing more. Some of my family was there when my son hit the pavement. In a show of concern, my mom came over to the picnic tables and slapped and admonished them. "Mean picnic tables," she said, making sure my son saw and heard her. But the picnic tables were not at fault. Neither was the concrete, nor the bird flying overhead. The blame, if there needs to be any, was on my son. He messed up because of lack of experience or observation. That's it. Playing the victim will not prevent you from being victimized. It will only make victimization more frequent. What you need to do with failure is realize what you can learn from it. In the case of my son, he could have decided never to try to balance on table seats again. He could decide to never stand again, never go to a park, never be with his grandma or his dad. But these reactions would be rooted in misplaced blame and would not have been in my son's best interest. From this simple example, you can see how mistakes and failures can guide you in any direction you choose. Will you focus on blame or, like my son, get back to solving the problem? Will you cower or will you conquer? Conquer. The bold business owner will conquer. Cowering will only lead to a weakening of the spirit and character of your business. Think of the quickly evolving landscape of business right now. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos stated to his competitors, "Your margin is my opportunity." That should scare the hell out of anyone who has a business selling anything in retail, whether online or in brick and mortar. You can either blame Amazon for taking market share that may cut into your profits, or you can thank them for being one of the movers who brought customers from buying with caution online to spending around $1.67 trillion in 2016 worldwide. That's trillion with a T. Either way, many failures, or challenges if you prefer, are blessings in disguise. The pain is your privilege. You have the opportunity to expand your business, take on these challenges, and grow as failures attempt to mount against you. Have you ever watched a professional fight? If so, you've seen the tale of the tape before the fight, which lists height, weight, and other stats pertaining to each fighter. What I find intriguing is that they include the professional fighter's history, including the number of fights won and lost. It may read something like 16 wins and 4 losses. Think about the fighter who has a history of 4 wins and 0 losses, and compare him to a fighter who has 12 wins and 4 losses. One of the reasons this information is given is because people understand the value of experience, including the experience of losing. Only in failure do you reach success. You can only get to the good stuff when you've done the hard stuff. Kate Hudson. The art of failure. What are the feelings that can come from failure? Often, the worst part about failure is not the actual event, but our reaction to it, our thoughts and feelings. We need to become aware of these feelings so that we can decide whether they are serving us in the best manner possible. Regret. Regret is the biggest issue in failure. I should have done this. I could have done that. If only we had more time, resources, money, power, people. If only we had more excuses. Regret is fine for a minute. After that, it's time to dust yourself off and realize the education you were just given. Your experience is a large part of your education. Worry. Mary Schmick, in her book, Wear Sunscreen, A Primer for Real Life, defines the uselessness of worry by stating that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. This simple acknowledgement leads me to believe that worrying is essentially useless. Care and concern have their place in your life. Worrying about what could be or might be is only going to cause you to fret. Bold business owners do not fret. Bold business owners accept the challenges life throws at them. They catch them, take a bite as big as they see fit, and throw back the scraps. Worrying does not empty tomorrow of its troubles. It empties today of its strength. Corrie ten Boom. Disgrace. How bad would you feel if you lost your business and, in the process, happened to lose your retirement funds, your family's house, and your kids' college savings? You'd probably feel pretty devastated, right? Though it would be a terrible thing, it would not be without a silver lining. Essentially, everything in life is education. Education is often expensive. What you need to do is avoid feeling or being disgraced. Acknowledge it and move on. Mourning. This is one for the truly emphatic. In business, we are often asked, indirectly, to make a choice. Undying compassion for the individual experiencing loss, or realistic expectations for the betterment of the group. I recommend that you lean toward the good of the group. As the circus saying goes, the show must go on. Just because your grandma died does not mean that your employees and customers are not relying on you. Take the time to mourn, then get up. You have work to do. Make it clear to your employees during their interviews how your business treats issues like these. You don't need 3 weeks off for a funeral. That's just not healthy anyway. Live the life you were given to the fullest. The dead will appreciate you more if you do. Procrastination. Procrastinate later. The stuff you put off is taking up space in your head for the stuff that you need to do now. It's best to just get it done or recognize that it's not worth doing at all. Touch everything on your desk only once. It should pass through your hands just one time. Just take care of it, resolve it, and leave that space in your head for the new and exciting things that will make you money. Your mind has infinite space that can be quickly filled with infinite things that will limit you. Keep your mind's roadway clear for progress. You proceed from false assumption. I have no ego to bruise. Leonard Nimoy. Assumptions of convenience. Assumptions of convenience are essentially beliefs that allow for what you want to be true, though these beliefs can destine you for failure. I was running late for work one day, and when I hustled outside to leave, I saw that my beloved Malibu had a flat tire. It was not flat enough that the wheel was on the ground, but it was noticeably squishy. My mind calculated what it would take to fill the tire with air. I could use a bike pump at home, which would take forever. I could drive to the local gas station, which would probably take longer. Alternatively, as my assumption of convenience came into play, I could make sure to drive 90 miles an hour down the highway to work, utilizing the power of centrifugal force to expand the tire to compensate for the lack of air. This option would not only allow me to get to work faster, it would also justify some questionably prudent speed. The decision was made and I was on my way. The centrifugal force is pretty sweet. Driving on a flat tire is a bad idea. Driving on a flat tire at 90 miles per hour is an even worse idea. Luckily, I made it to work. However, that excursion cost me a tire, as the drive essentially overheated the tire and destroyed it from the inside out. That night of work, I earned $3.85 an hour for 6 hours, so about $23 before taxes. The replacement tire cost me over $80, plus installation. The assumption of convenience worked very well for immediate satisfaction. It worked against me in all other facets. Lessons learned. Assumptions of convenience are everywhere. Make sure that when you make an assumption, it is founded on fact and not just hope. All of these assumptions of convenience will make you, as a bold business owner, weaker. They will creep into your life and business disguised as opportunities. The thing about opportunity is that it doesn't always unveil itself as openly as we wish it would. The least questioned assumptions are often the most questionable. Stephen R. Covey. Are you a frantic business owner? I work with a lot of business owners. Every once in a while, I want to grab them by the shoulders and snap them out of whatever delusion they're in. Life doesn't have to be this hard, especially if you've started your own business and have it rolling. Did you start your business to get a heart attack at an awkwardly early age? I give a little bit of slack to any owner who's been in business less than 2 years or had a major loss in employees or customers. Occasionally, the universe wants to make sure you are as tough as you think you are. But if you're running around frantic, missing appointments, constantly running late, and are always moving at 120 miles per hour every day, something is awry. Even race cars need to pit. Let me be the first to admit that I set my internal cruise on 120 pretty often. People who know me would say that 120 miles per hour is casual speed for me. But let me follow that by saying I don't run that fast for 40 hours per week. I move that fast for maybe 30 hours per week, if not less. The beauty of running fast is finishing sooner. Running fast and hard is almost a necessity for business owners. But burning that much fuel with that much violence for more than 40 hours a week is crazy. You can just get a normal job and waste at least 20 hours a week and not be so stressed. The point is to run fast on the right track. Racing around for no reason is not progress. It's wasteful. But that's not the story many business owners tell themselves. They're only ever thinking about how to get past the next deadline, or presentation, or meeting, or sale, or purchase, or contract, or commitment. They assume it will all be easier after that. Does that really ever happen? Does the end ever show up? We all delude ourselves with untruths that we are convinced are real every day. Remember the last time you were late? Maybe it was traffic or time slipped away from you. As you were on your way to the appointment, you justified your tardiness in your head. It's only a couple minutes. They just chat in the beginning anyway. No one will notice. This isn't rude at all. They should be honored by my lateness. I want to give credit to my wife here. Tardiness is a huge pet peeve of hers. I was the guy who tried to fit 5 hours of stuff in a 1 hour time slot. Typically, I'd end up fitting it in an hour and 20 minutes, which I thought was pretty good. But it turns out that if you are routinely 20 minutes late to meeting your wife, she doesn't care why you were late. She, and most people, only care that you made them wait. The reason why you're late isn't important. The fact that you felt compelled to waste their time is the screaming detail that you need to notice. Respect those who are willing to make time for you, even if you're paying them. Time is our most precious resource. Everyone has the same amount of time each day. Some people just value it more than others. I'm certain that whatever value people place on their time, they probably consider it more valuable than anyone else's. This includes yours, mine, and everyone else's time. Here's my suggestion. Race when the race is ready and needed. Then go home, enjoy your life. You are too awesome to miss all the fun you are having. A sense of duty is useful in work, but offensive in personal relations. Bertrand Russell. My dad. I want to preface this shortish story about my dad by making a few things clear. I respect my dad very much. If I had been in his place with his experience, I would probably have done the same things. Second, as many others have said before, you are either a warning or an example. In many cases, my dad served as a warning for me. So for that, I thank you, Dad. I come from a family of 5 kids, and I'm right in the middle. My dad provided 5 kids with food and shelter for almost 30 years. That alone takes a toll on a guy. Add in a marriage that wasn't the best, and some inner emotional turmoil that may never get resolved without help. Just keep those emotions hidden where they belong, right? During this funding of food and shelter for our family, my dad went through a few jobs, mostly in retail management. After getting the boot a few too many times due to circumstances outside of his control, he decided to go off on his own. Sound familiar? Now, keep in mind that he was starting off on his own with no guaranteed income, no paid vacation, and very little in regard to a financial safety net. He also had 7 mouths to feed and 7 people to keep in a house with clothes and shoes. Talk about risk. He ended up buying a milk delivery route, which, when mentioned, seems to make people think he went to people's houses in his carriage and delivered his daily dose of milk in glass bottles. Though the story goes back in time, it doesn't go quite that far back. You see, this was a milk delivery business in the late 80s and through the 90s. He was delivering milk to grocery stores, schools, restaurants, and the like. It turns out that milk is heavy, and delivery trucks are expensive. Running a refrigerator that you can walk into gets expensive. Servicing towns that have fewer people living in them than the closest big box chain store has employees also leaves you with pretty low revenue numbers per stop. This led to one of the lessons I learned from my dad. Take care of the little guy, but take care of the big guys first. Without the big places buying milk in a substantial quantity, you cannot sustain taking care of only the smaller clients. My dad delivered milk for almost 30 years, 4 to 6 days per week, and typically worked 10 to 14 hours per day, hustling milk to these places and driving on to the next stop. Rinse and repeat. My dad's hope of a compelling future was limited in this business, so his example provided a few lessons here as well. One of the lessons was to have an end game in mind. How will you leave your business? Do you want to sell your business and have it bring you some cash for your trouble? How can you make your business more valuable? The idea here, of course, is to sell your business at the highest possible price and have many people ready to buy it when you are ready to sell. But that's tough to do when what you're selling is a job with terrible hours, bad pay, and a very heavy product to move. This brings us to another lesson. Have a business for which you can hire employees so you don't have to work so hard every day. When you have employees, you want to rely on them to help you when the need arises. My dad eventually found one employee. The guy was super nice, and my dad tested his loyalty, though not intentionally. At one point, my dad ended up with a serious bladder infection that landed him in the hospital. While laid up in the hospital, you can be certain your priorities change a bit. As a business owner, you find ways to survive. You also find ways to maintain the survival of your business, even from a hospital bed. Was this milk delivery business a legacy, or was it how he was going to pay for some medical bills? Maybe both. My dad's employee helped save the business. He essentially ran two milk routes with a little help from my brother and brother-in-law. The whole point of the lesson on gathering loyal employees is twofold. Not everyone wants to work a ton in their life. Life is too short to spend it working more than you need to. Beyond that, every once in a while, stuff happens to you, your business, or your family that you never saw coming. Life will test you. Employees will help you pass that test. Employees will help you by picking up some, or all, of the slack in your absence or other employees' absence. Loyal, trustworthy, and smart employees are like gold to a business. Find a way to get them, train them, and keep them. Lessons learned. Breathe. The lesson to take here is to remember to breathe. In and out, slowly and methodically as needed. I can breathe, currently, for free. When I do this, I can be in a meditative trance and calm my nerves, if only for a few seconds. And I don't get cancer, so that's cool. Keep moving forward. One powerful and positive thing I learned from my dad is to keep it moving. If you find that you did something that didn't work, try something else. Repeat that process until you succeed. The word until is key. Although success, as I desired, eluded my family during my childhood years, I can tell you that my dad continued to pursue success relentlessly, which makes me feel bad for those who achieve their dreams and become stagnant. Lessons learned. Appreciation. I often come across companies or people that I feel do not live up to my expectations. Either the results of their work are subpar or the customer service is lacking in both professionalism and an apparent desire for a customer. Presumably, they are not intentionally doing a bad job. The recommendation is to appreciate that the people behind these companies have goals, desires, and knowledge, although they may not align with what you feel they should be doing. Appreciate that they are at least trying. Then find a better way to do it by going somewhere else or use this experience to create a new company. Education is everywhere. My dad taught me a ton about what to do and what not to do in my business. Some of these lessons I had to experience even after being exposed to them in order to really solidify the knowledge. Use your experiences as you go about your day getting an education, watching the systems of fast food restaurants, listening to how other companies answer their phones, even discovering how huge hotels stay clean with their array of employees. All of these experiences can broaden your knowledge. All you need to do is become aware of this vast education. Then, actually implement what you learn. Lessons I learned from my dad include 1. Avoid trading money for time. You will always give away more time than you mean to, and you have a limit to how much time you actually have to trade. 2. Family time is important. Many members of my family resented my dad while he was working so many hours. It was a vicious cycle. We resented him, so he kept working. He kept working, so we resented him. 3. Some people just need to work with their hands to earn a living. I have a tough time justifying not working with my hands for a living. There is a pride that comes with working with your hands. But like most areas of pride, it can cost you. Pride is expensive. 4. Know how to fix things if you need to. If a zombie apocalypse comes, do you think the survivors will celebrate having an author or a guy that moves thousands of pounds of milk a day? Work that is subject to weather can be tough. Snowy days or sunny days, people will eat cookies and cereal, which means they will consume milk. Driving through bad weather is not fun and makes for a long day with no added profit for your troubles. Celebrate great vendors. The people that delivered the product to my dad came in two types, awesome and probably drunk. The awesome people were rewarded and helped in any way my dad could. The probably drunk people drove their trucks into anything and everything. My dad did everything possible to get more awesome people for the safety, liability, as well as knowing that the alternative was filled with problems that needed quick solutions. 5. Love who you work for. My dad befriended just about every one of his clients. To my disillusionment at the time, he chatted with almost every customer during every stop. A quick conversation went well towards keeping the relationship moving. He always brought a smile to his clients. 6. Solve your problems. Whether it was a broken down truck or a missed delivery, my dad did not go to a board of directors to try to discover a solution. He just took action to solve the problem, immediately and diligently until it was solved. 7. Get your kids to work for cheap. Wait a second. Battle Tested by Kate Lind of Aspect Compliance. AspectCompliance.com. I began my campaign finance compliance business in 2009 to fill a need in political committees. Through industry experience, I had gained a deep understanding of this need and believed that I had a solution. Initially, I began providing these services to a single client. After just a few months, the workload for this client suddenly exploded to a point beyond which I could no longer manage the work without staff, office space, and improved processes. After a couple of missteps, I eventually had the fortune to find myself with a team of loyal, hardworking staff who lent their blood, sweat, and tears to the effort alongside me. When deadlines loomed, members of my staff would show up to work in the morning with overnight bags and pillows, knowing that they would be at the office well into the wee hours in the morning. It was trial by fire, and 24 months after my business opened its doors, we were exhausted, but battle-tested and still standing. It took several more years for the business to evolve to a place where the pit in my stomach, fear that we had missed something, that a mistake had been made, that the business would fail, finally got some relief. New business owners may need to be prepared to go years without a day off, let alone a vacation. If you are bootstrapping your new business as I did, you may have the added need to earn an additional stream of income. I was able to transition from my existing full-time job into a part-time role while building the business and representing the occasional legal client on the side. The biggest struggle I ran into was settling on a pricing model that was palatable and affordable to our clients while generating a profit, or in the early years, at least breaking even. Our services were new to many of our clients, and we were underpricing them in an effort to establish a client base and gain experience. Eventually, we were able to establish a pricing structure that was both fair and workable. We have devoted a great deal of effort to making our processes more efficient so that we can charge less than our competition while remaining profitable. It is important to me to continue offering our services for an affordable price while ensuring that our employees earn decent pay and benefits and are able to enjoy a healthy work-life balance. While we still experience the occasional long days and weekend hours, they are few and far between, and, to my knowledge, no one sleeps at the office anymore. Barriers to building a successful business vary by industry, but I have to think that a few guiding principles should apply across the board. It is my experience that starting a new business requires hard work, an understanding that there will be tough times, and an expectation that you and your business will struggle through some pretty lean months or even years. For me, it helped that I was financially unable to consider failure to be an option, and that I was blissfully ignorant to what I didn't know. Not every day will be a good one, and you will make some very real sacrifices for your business. If you don't love what you're doing, I have a hard time imagining an outcome of professional and personal success for you. Fortunately, for me, the rewards of being a successful business owner have justified the risks and the struggles.